All right, y'all. Welcome back to Two Dudes, One God Pod. And it's really exciting. We've got an amazing guest today, Mr. Paul Roberts.
Yes, I'm really excited about you being here, Paul. Like, as I told you earlier, like, over the years, I've gotten to see you speak on certain topics, and every time, like, you just knock it right out of the park. It's such an encouragement to see you and Melanie being together in this world for so long, and to pour out into other people. You know, y'all have never been anybody that poured directly into me, but I've been in y'all's atmosphere and kind of rubbed shoulders with some of the same people with cowboy churches and everything like that. And y'all have just been such a blessing to my life, and y'all don't even know it.
I didn't know it.
That's okay. That is okay.
I mean, so. It's like that. Sometimes you pour into somebody and that person will bless somebody else, and it's because of you. And Paul, I know that you've got a heart for men and really have, in my experience, been a great example of a Jesus follower. And you and Melanie have done some wonderful stuff. You did my wife and I's premarital counseling, which was really stressful for me. Because,
which we never finished.
Yeah, but you married us anyway.
I did. I broke all my rules.
Yeah, you married us anyway. And I think that I was scared to even go. And I think my wife was more scared.
To the counseling or the wedding?
The marriage counseling, mostly, I think. Yeah. I mean, you know, because she was not yet a believer. I think we're still a little bit up in the air on that. And but I guess I'm interested to hear, Paul, how did God call you to this kind of stuff? Because I don't think this is kind of a mystery to people in my generation. And certainly Pat and I, we did a lot of the wrong things from the beginning. I lived my life in reverse, like had a kid, never got married to that woman, got married, got divorced, you know, lived with my current wife and then got married. You know, I've done everything backwards. And I think.
And I never threw one single rock at you, brother.
That's right.
Not
that's
one. Right. Don't you ever forget that.
Well, we've got a young man scheduled in November to come in and talk. And I think that he's pretty remarkable. Like, young guy in the Wrangler program with the AFCC Cowboy Camp, and Pat and I were talking about it, and I know that you haven't heard the first two episodes of this podcast as of now while we're recording this, but if you go back and listen to them later, this episode's going to launch not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow, and I think you're going to be our first guest, Paul, that... You know, I could be wrong. You may just blow me away, but I think you pretty well did the big stuff in the right order. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. I don't want to become a podcast for just degenerate junkie burnouts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish that I had done things a little different. I don't regret the way my life went, because everything that happened put me in a position now where I could be of maximum effectiveness to helping men that have been through what I've been through. Mm. And I think that you've bridged the divide. You've been able to actually help people that have gotten into bigger pickles than you've gotten in without having been through it. And that's a little bit amazing to me, coming from a recovery background. It was really tough for me to listen to, like, pastors or counselors that, like, had never drank a beer or never smoked weed. But then when I think about it from a clinical perspective, people that have schizophrenia don't readily get help from psychiatrists that also have schizophrenia. That doesn't make any sense. And so you've just been a great example of somebody that shows grace and love, and you just have a passion for helping, and you're not only passionate about it, but you're good at it. You've got it down to a system, a science, I think. And so tell us a little bit about that. Where you're from, how long you've been married, you know, how did your walk with God start?
Well, I was raised in rural Wills Point, on a cotton farm. My dad was a cotton farmer, and at 5 years old, I was on my first cattle drive, and the horse ran away with me. His name was Foxy.
Ooh.
But anyway, that's, you know, I plowed cotton, hoed cotton, picked cotton, hated cotton.
High cotton.
Is that shirt cotton?
That's shirt cotton. And my dad was the biggest cotton farmer in Van Zandt County for a while, one of them. And he was the first man in Van Zandt County to own a cotton stripper. A picker, you know, some people would call it. And so it was kind of interesting growing up there because I had to work my butt off every day. Can I say butt?
I think we'll let that slide.
So that was the atmosphere, 7 miles out in the country. Didn't go to town very often, especially during the summer, and worked. And, you know, I stayed pretty much in the right crowd. Went to church. I'm sure my mother had me in church whenever I was a week old, you know.
What did the people in the wrong crowd do back in 1950-something, 53 or 7?
I didn't know anybody that was in the wrong crowd until probably the middle 60s.
Got it. Was that when you were at Texas State? Oh, no. Not Texas even. Tech.
I didn't go to Texas Tech.
University of Texas.
No.
Where'd you go?
I started at A&M
in
71.
Like a good man.
But yeah, well, you know, Vietnam was raging.
Right.
And they had the lottery, you know, back then, the ping pong balls.
Mm-hmm.
And they drew ping pong balls. And one of my best friends that I was raised with, he was number one. He was drafted in 2 weeks. He was gone. And my number, I always thought was 150. But I don't think it was 150 now. I think it was like 220 or something. So I'd have never been drafted. But I was afraid I was, so I went to A&M, Air Force ROTC, and was going to fly jets.
Okay.
Well, I was stupid. Had no idea that all of the POWs, or most of them in Vietnam, were fighter pilots.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
All the famous ones that you've heard of.
Yeah, that's true.
They're all fighter pilots.
And now they're all politicians.
Yeah, that's right. Well, one of them died recently. So,
yeah.
But so before I went to A&M, I was in church every week. And, you know, I had developed this singing voice. And apparently I was okay at it. And so I started singing at the church, First Baptist. And so the old folks, when I was in high school, that had the Sunday school classes, they all wanted music before they started their lessons. So I made the circuit on Sunday mornings.
Oh, okay.
Singing
in the classrooms.
In the classroom, you know, for the old folks.
And, yeah.
And so one day, I just graduated from high school. I was 17 still. I was the second youngest one in my class. July birthday. And so I had been invited to be the guest soloist at a revival in Edgewood, Texas. Baptist Church, Edgewood. It was big time. There may have been 50 people there. But anyway, back then that was okay. And so the song leader would lead the music. I'd get up and sing a special, and then the preacher would preach. And so this girl that I was from Edgewood, but I was lifelong friends with her, knew her dad, and she was sitting beside me in the pew, and the guy was preaching, and he gave the invitation. And so now I'd been baptized when I was 9 years old and walked the aisle and all that. And so I'd started drinking pretty heavy as a teenager.
Really?
And,
really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was
drinking water?
No.
Like what? Communion juice? What are we talking about? I can't see it. I just can't see it.
I wasn't a believer, but I thought I was at 9 years old. But it was so interesting. I'll tell you how bad it was. I got drunk the night before my track meet district track meet my senior year, and I was supposed to win discus and go to state. You know, I was supposed to be that guy. I got third place. I didn't even go to go to regional.
I'm
and
just dumbfounded right even, now, Paul.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Well, I can identify
don't be
with
too,
that.
Don't be too dumbfounded.
I was so drunk going into my senior year. And I was a section leader for the tubas, and I had to mark spots on the field. But I was so drunk because I put liquor in my Gatorade bottle that I had to have an underclassman mark all the spots.
Oh, know? Wow. Well, you know, whenever I was a senior in high school, we didn't even know what Gatorade was. So, anyway, I did terrible. I felt bad. But anyway, fast forward again, I'm at this revival. And this girl sat beside me. She said, would you go down with me? I really feel like I want to get saved. So I was sitting on the outside because I'd sung the song, you know. Mm. So I got out, and we're headed down the aisle. And in that moment, God showed up.
That was Melanie?
No. No, this was a girl named Janine.
Okay.
And anyway, and she got to praying with the pastor and all that stuff with the preacher, and I took her down and I went out the left door over here.
Oh.
And God hit me with a sledgehammer when I was walking down that aisle and said, son, it's about time you started serving me.
Mm.
And I went out to my car. And I accepted Christ.
Oof.
Wow.
I thought I knew him, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Blew me away. So my best friend, Paul, one of my best friends, Paul Trent, had left because, see, I was working in the farm, right?
Mm.
So it was hay cutting time. So I couldn't go to the youth camp. So he went, and the same night I got saved, he got saved in New Mexico.
Wow.
And at the camp. So when he came back, he looked at me and said, hey, you're not going to believe what happened to me. I said, you're not going to believe what happened to me. So that whole summer, there was four of us, and we really studied a lot of scripture.
Yeah.
Really read for the first time in my life. I devoured the Bible.
Mm.
And so then I went to A&M.
Mm.
And I was a believer, and I wanted to be a fighter pilot worse than anything on the planet.
Mm.
But the one thing that I really wanted to be was an astronaut.
That's right, because that was a big deal at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm in my uniform, ROTC, A&M, big time at A&M, because people that graduated went under contract. They were second lieutenants, and they went straight into training to go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that first month I was in, they called it air science, and it was taught by a major in the Air Force. And here we're all, you know, cadets, and we're in there. And so first day of class, he goes down everybody in the class. In this class, there was probably 40 in there. He went down each one, wanted to know why you're in there, want to be in the Air Force, you know, because we hadn't signed any contracts.
Mm.
And he got to me, and I said, well, I want to join the astronaut program. I want to be an astronaut. And he said, well, how about your math scores? And I said, they're great. I, you know, made straight A's in all math. He said, well, good, okay. And he went to the next guy. Well, at the end of class. Have I ever told you this story?
Mm-mm.
At the end of class, he said, Roberts, he said, come up, I want to talk to you. So here I'm standing there, and this guy's probably 5'10 at the most. You know, I'm 6'3 at the time, and I've shrunk.
Anyway, I was going to say the same thing.
Anyway, he looked at me and said, I got bad news for you, son.
You're
said,
too
what?
Tall.
That's right. He said, you'll never be in the astronaut program. You're too tall.
Yeah.
I won't tell you, I went back to my room and cried.
Yeah.
It busted my bubble like you wouldn't believe. And so from that moment on, I started, it was a God thing,
because
I started evaluating my choice to be in the Air Force.
Yeah.
And by the end of the semester, I'd quit. Mm. I was no longer in the Corps. I had to finish out the semester, and I transferred to TJC.
Okay.
Stayed there for one semester, really trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and God gave me a scripture, and I was reading. It talked about singing. Sing, song, and singing were the three words that were in that verse. To this day, I can't tell you where that verse is. I've never read it again.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so, anyway, so that led me to TJC, to the music. So I became a music major. And I transferred to East Texas Baptist College in the fall of 72. And, no. Yes, fall of 72. So we were. I was there going to school. I was a music major with a Bible, or, you know, they called it religion minor, and at East Texas Baptist. And there's a student center there, and there's there's all these ping pong tables down there. Mm-hmm. Well, I was down there one day, and it was pretty much, you know, like in September, and the. There was a ping pong tournament going on. It was doubles, mixed doubles.
Okay.
I didn't know nobody. I was there. You know, Paul was there. My buddy Paul went with me, the one I got saved the same week mm-hmm. with. We were roommates. And I was a sophomore. Mm-hmm. And so there was this gorgeous girl sitting over here at this table full of gorgeous girls. And I walked up to one of them and I said, I need a ping pong partner. And she said, okay. So we entered the tournament and we won.
Yeah.
So we walked outside and I asked her on a date. Hmm. Didn't ask her name. I was just scared to death. I turned around, walked back to my room, and I went, oh my God, I don't even know her name. So I didn't even know who to ask for. Because
right.
Back then.
Yeah, to ask them to come out.
Yeah, to ask them to come out, you know. And so I went and. And there was this girl walked by that I had seen Melanie with, and I told her, I said, what's that girl's name? She said, it's Melanie. I said, oh, okay, thank you. Melanie, boy, I'm right on my brain. When she said the word Melanie, I turned to go to my room. The Lord slammed me in the head a second time.
Yeah.
And he said, she's going to be your wife. Mm. And I went, I don't even know her, Lord. Mm. And he said, you will. Just trust me.
Yeah.
And I said, Lord, I trust you. And so we went there for a year. We left. At that time, East Texas Baptist College was a pitiful place to be. Mm. You had all this, in the 70s, you had all these different sectors of the Baptist church, and they were liberal, and we had classes to where they would tell us that the Bible, you can't believe all of it. Mm. And my New Testament class, the guy that had read, we didn't even study the New Testament. We studied the Apocrypha, which is the books mm-hmm. between, you know,
wow.
that the Catholics came up
what
with.
What year is this? 72?
72.
Wow.
And so I left. Hmm. We left. We got married September, and we went to Dallas to Christ for the Nations Institute. And that's where I really began to get deep into the scripture and life, mm. you know. And so I started teaching the Bible. Mm. And we were going to a church in Grand Saline, and we helped start the church. Melanie and I did. It was a church plant, and it was growing in leaps and bounds. And I'd come home on the weekend, and, you know, and the preacher wanted me to talk. Because I was going to Bible school. Mm. And he was every bit better than me. But anyway, so that kind of got me started. And then we, a few years later, after we started the church there in Grand Saline, they needed somebody to do the youth program there. And it was growing in leaps and bounds. We had 15, 20 kids every Sunday coming to church there, and young teenagers. So I just felt like the Lord spoke to me, and Melanie too, mm-hmm. and we were to become the youth pastors. And so when we took it over, it was pretty much not a youth program.
Right.
It was a, it was just like a Sunday school class. Mm. And so I knew how to run a youth program. And
yeah, you could sing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Melanie played the piano too, yeah. by the way.
I don't think I've ever heard you sing.
Really?
Oh, maybe. That's,
you know why? Because I can't anymore.
Oh.
Oh.
I can sometimes.
Okay.
That's a long story. Won't go into that one.
Okay.
I lost my voice. But anyway, so we started teaching the kids choruses and how to worship the Lord.
Yeah.
And that led from one thing to another, and they asked me to be the worship leader at the church. And we were there for years and years, and we had the greatest youth group. It grew to 40 and 50 kids. And we went places and did things and saw so many kids saved and everything. And I felt the Lord calling me to another church.
So you have kids during this time? Like y'all mm-hmm. had kids? What were yeah. you, was this your primary job? Was
doing No. Oh, okay. I never got paid.
Okay.
We were music youth pastors for 20 years, and I never got a check.
Wow.
I was a carpenter.
Okay.
That's and fitting.
Then were you like a framer or like yeah. you built cabinets okay. or what?
All of it.
Okay. Every bit of it.
Back then, if you were on a framing crew,
uh-huh.
you started a house by building the forms.
Hmm. Got it.
And you finished it whenever the cabinets were done. We did it all.
Got
you
it.
Know? And so I did that for a while. And on the way to work one morning, I was in the truck with my boss. And another guy was in there with us. And we were working together in the carpenter work. And we had a wreck going to work. And it nearly killed all three of us.
Mm.
And I woke up in the middle of the highway, Highway 64 right out here. Ugh. And at 314 where it crosses.
No way.
Well,
there was a guy. My boss pulled out in front of a guy going 70 miles an hour. And he broadsided us. And fortunately, it didn't kill anybody. But, man, I had a towel wrapped around my head. And I was laying in the middle of the street. The highway. I had a towel wrapped around my head, and I was just obliterated. I passed back out. And right before I passed out, I raised my head to see the guy that was in the middle was laying in the street with his face down.
Hmm.
And the only thing I could hear was my boss screaming at the top of his lungs.
Hmm.
He was trapped, but he had a busted pelvis, which they tell me is one of the worst pain you can ever have. And so next thing I woke up, I was in the ambulance headed to Tyler. And the only thing I could hear was him screaming. So he was in the same ambulance with me. And the next thing I know is I'm waking up to a woman saying, "You're breaking my arm. You're breaking my arm." And I had a hold of the nurse because they were sewing up my head.
Oh, man.
Goodness.
And she was going down, buddy. And I had her and I was twisting her arm, and I didn't even know it, you know.
Yeah.
I thought I had a hold of the bar on the bed, probably, but I told her I was sorry. And the next thing I woke up, I'm in the hallway because the hospital down here, ETMC, was too full.
Hmm.
And my wife was standing over me, Melanie was. And so that changed our lives forever, that wreck, because he couldn't work for at least 6 months, and I wasn't a finished carpenter. I could do the work as long as he showed me what to do, and so I had to go get another job. So my wife's dad ran a company in Houston, and we went down for Thanksgiving one year, 1977, and he invited me to be a part of his company. And that's And on the way home, Melanie said, "I'm not moving back to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You forget it." So he said, "I don't want you to move back. You can start a branch of our business here in Tyler." Or it was actually in Grand Saline.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to edit this, but because it's too long.
But we probably won't.
But the so we were at a, you know, we were music youth pastors at the time, and we had gotten involved in the charismatic movement, and the charismatic movement was the thing that really unleashed worship in the church at large.
Yeah.
You know, until the charismatic movement, the Baptist church was a guy standing at, on the pulpit, waving his arms, singing, you know, three verses and three songs and sitting down. After the charismatic movement hit, all the Baptist churches picked it up. It took a while, but it was really interesting to watch the transformation, and the Holy Spirit just blanketed the American church. It was amazing. We used to go to Catholic meetings during that time, and the Catholics were just loved Jesus just as much as we did.
Yeah.
Great worship services. And I remember getting in a van and a bunch of us driving to Bishop Lynch High School in Dallas, which was a total Catholic school. And man, there's preachers standing up there preaching Jesus just like you and I would. And worship service and bands playing. I mean, it was the 70s. It was an incredible year.
Yeah.
And we, the decade of the 70s was awesome. And so, you know, and I'm 71 now.
Yeah.
So this started whenever I was 19.
Right.
And actually started when I was 17, but didn't get rolling until I was 19. And so we, the one bad thing about the charismatic movement, and if somebody hears this, you're going to get a phone call.
Yeah.
Is that the structure of the charismatic churches was something to be, I mean, it was not real good.
Yeah.
There wasn't the checks and balances that, let's say, the Southern Baptist Church has. You know, I mean, there may be a thousand churches, but they're all kind of watched over by...
Under overseers and structures.
Yes, yeah. And structure. Not so with the charismatic.
They didn't have a lot of committees in the charismatic movement.
Oh, no. We didn't even like the word.
Right.
Yeah. So after years of doing that, we were a part of so many churches that we were totally ingrained in. We had youth groups of 50 kids, and we were just working our butts off and not getting paid for it.
Right.
And then they would split. Somebody would get mad.
Somebody requires you got to speak tongues to be saved.
That's exactly right. Yep. See, that's baloney.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the charismatic movement, and you can't show me one scripture that says that.
Right.
And so as a result, Melanie and I got sick of it.
Yeah.
And we lived in Grand Saline at the time, and we said, I'm quitting. So we were...
How old were y'all? I'm sorry.
Let's just say we're in our early 30s.
Okay.
Mid-30s.
So 70s is over.
Yeah. This is in 98.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
No. 89.
89. Okay.
I'm not dyslexic, I promise.
I'm not a smart man, but that math was hard for me.
Yeah. No. And so... my son was a freshman in high school. My daughter was in seventh grade. And so I called the pastor of the church in Lindale where we were music youth pastors. And I told him, I said, I've been wanting out for a long time. The church had split three times while we were there.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how that all works. That's for another podcast, though. I called up the pastor, who he and I are to this day still very close friends, because he had to pick up the pieces. He wasn't the pastor when it started splitting.
He
was going to church there, and we said, hey, we need to have somebody that's not gonna split this thing, and it was him. And so I called him up on Sunday morning and said, I'm resigning, and today's my last. And you know what he told me? He said, I already knew it. I went, you did? He said, yeah, I knew it. He said, it wasn't that you've done anything. He said, right. The Lord told me.
Right.
And I went, knowing this guy, I said, that don't surprise me.
Yeah.
So we went, started going to Main Street Baptist Church in Grant Saline. And we were just going to be church members and just go. Melanie and me and our two kids. Oh, the first few weeks was just glorious. We just sat there and listened to the preacher and sang the three songs, you know, and the choir special, and got a phone call. The pastor, who I had known since I was in high school, he called me, and he said, Karen and I want to come out. You might ought to delete that name. We want to come out and talk to y'all. And so I said, okay, what you want to talk to me about? You know? So they came out, beautiful couple. He was such a man of God. Oh. And he said, I need help. And he said, and you're the one to help me. He said, we have a pitiful youth program. And I know you can do it. And you can do it under the auspices of the Sunday school department where we don't ruffle any feathers. So I said, well, give me time to pray. Melanie was in there. We all talked about it. And so it took about 3 or 4 days. And the Lord gave me the green light. Mm. And so, which he doesn't have green lights. He only has red. Mm-hmm. By the way, learn that at Christ for the Nations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's for another podcast.
Oh, man, we're getting so much material.
And so we took it. I was the Sunday school director for the high school department. And under that, we took a youth group of basically four committed kids. It had more kids in it than that, but we had four kids. Hmm. And I can't tell you who the four kids were.
Oh.
because you would know who I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And
that's exciting.
Anyway, it went from 4 to 100.
Wow.
We had 100 kids.
And this is in 89? 89, 90, 91, and 92.
Wow. We were 4 years there. We had home groups. We started Tuesday night. We called it share group. And we had it in different homes. The parents opened up the homes, and the home completely full of kids. Just had a blast. We fed them. We did things that no other youth people were doing at the time. And they just flocked to it. And we baptized 100 kids in 1 year.
Hmm.
It was pretty fascinating to me. And then as things go, had problems. Church had problems. Had nothing to do with me. Had problems. And so we were fed up. Our son was graduating from high school, so we moved on. And we started going to a church in Garden Valley. And we were just glad to be at church. There for 2 weeks, they asked us to be youth pastors.
This is a pattern. Mm-hmm. You can't just go to a church, can you?
Mm-mm.
Huh.
First youth meeting we had 60 kids. And that's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And it grew from there. And so then I got old.
Mm.
We decided to quit. So then we just started leading music. And in 01, this brings me to where I am today.
Mm.
In 01, Brian Childress introduced me to a training that we went to. And he said, he went to Atlanta, Georgia to go to it. And so I went to the one in Dallas, and there were 50 people that went through it, and I'm not going to tell you the name of it, but it totally changed my life. I mean, drastically changed my outlook on what, not only what Christianity was all about, but what God what God wanted us to be on this earth. And I thought I was doing good, you know. And I learned a lot. And the next couple of years was fascinating. And out of that came men's boot camp.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so special about you, Paul, is you really disciple people. You're not trying to save them, per se, but you're actually showing them, leading them in how to be, how to walk with God. And I think you're one of the first, you know, a handful of people that I've met that when I showed up and just started kind of telling you how crazy my life was, you weren't
and
like...
And it was crazy.
You weren't like, stop. We're not doing that here, you know. You were just like, tell me a little bit more, you know. I was like, okay, I will, you know. I mean...
Well, the eyes in the room were about that big around whenever you started talking, including mine.
Oh, yeah, those guys, they were like, we're not sure if you're saved because you don't feel guilty. And I was like, pretty sure I'm saved. I was a Baptist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So is that when you and Melanie started doing coaching, or did was that more of like a love and respect thing happened later?
Happened a little later, yeah. We got thrown into so many different type of situations that required knowledge of how to do it. And that's why whenever you said marriage counseling a while ago, I was wanting to interrupt you, but you know good and well I don't like that word.
Hmm.
We are not counselors. We are coaches, life coaches. I have a plaque that says I'm a life coach. So
got the credentials.
Well, yeah. I heard that Dave Ramsey's just handing out that financial coach badge to anybody that wants to buy into that franchise.
I didn't buy into a franchise.
Not the same.
I paid for the coaching. It was a year-long program that we went to in California.
Wow.
And we didn't stay out there except on weekends. We'd go and we'd have an intense weekend of training, and then we'd come back home on Sunday night or Monday morning, and then but they sent us home with a whole bunch of
homework.
Material.
Yeah.
Got it.
We had to eat it, you know, and then we'd go back and we'd go over it and go through it. But it was from that I began to learn what it means to be a coach, and I started learning about marriage because...
So after, had your marriage just been like sweet the whole time, or...
Mm-mm. Well, that's what I was fixing to tell you.
Oh, okay.
You want to hear it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I
don't know if I want to tell it.
Yeah, come on with it.
After 20 years of marriage, Melanie was 39, I was 40. We did the typical 20-year hit the wall in marriage. And let's just say, without any detail, that I thought my marriage was over. And this is part of the marriage stuff.
This is because you wouldn't go country western dancing?
Yeah. Part of it.
Sinful.
Yeah, it is. It's bad, sinful. And when we started going, started taking lessons, Melanie and I did. I'm telling you, man, I set that little woman down and I said, all right, I had a pad and a piece of paper. I said, give me the top 10 things that you can't stand about me. No, I'm not going to do that. I said, no. You need to do that. I need to know what's wrong with me.
Wow.
She started doing it. She gave me 10. And within a month.
She didn't give you more than 10?
Mm-mm.
She stopped at 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's different.
Yeah.
What a gracious woman.
I only asked for 10.
I think my wife's cut from the same cloth. If I said give me 3, she would go, give me a few hours. And she'd give me only 3.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm not saying that there might not be 3 more later, but I'd have to ask for it.
She was tired of what she called the religious activity. She was, and she'll admit to you, she was sitting here, she'd say the devil got a hold of her. The devil planted lies. And come to find out, some of the lies were planted within the first year we were married. And they took them 20 years to swell. But I'll tell you, the first 10 years of our marriage were like unbelievable. We were just so great. And then I knew something was going on. I knew because she was kind of pulling away from me.
How long did you know something was wrong?
Years.
10 years?
It wasn't that long. It was a good 3-4.
So the first 10 years were great.
Great.
The next few years were
mediocre.
But you had kids and you know.
Life.
So that's expected. But so then things were pretty stable and you could tell she was pulling away for a few years.
Now you gotta understand, this is one of the great mysteries of marriage. Okay, so we'd been married for 20 years, had 2 kids. What do you think was happening in our marriage, in our life? Kids were leaving. Mm. Emptiness syndrome. And it hit us hard. And so I took that list of 10 things, and I changed every one of them within a month that I did. And it was crazy stuff, like the way I fold my towel.
Really? I've got the same problem. And she shows me how to fold it, and I'll fold like 2 of them right, and then the 3rd one will be wrong. But you know what? My wife is amazing. She says, thank you for folding the towels. And then I'll open the door, and they'll be a little different. And I'm like, hey, what? And she's like, oh, I fixed the one that was folded wrong. And she doesn't chase me down and go, you didn't fold this right. You know?
My ex-wife,
she'd be like, you don't ever help out.
Yeah.
And you don't ever do the dishes. So I'd go do the dishes, and then she'd go, well, you didn't put them back right. You didn't load them in the dishwasher right. And so I don't know. I'm telling you, I think that I pretty much lucked out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And believe me, I'm sitting right here to tell you that I missed a lot of things in those first 20 years. I was building a business. We were music youth pastors, building youth groups. And maybe I did, I don't say maybe, I did do things wrong.
Wow, Trey here with Two Dudes, One God Pod. I hope you've been enjoying the first few episodes, and what a blessing Paul Roberts has been during this episode. Now, guys, I've got good news. We ran super long with Paul on Halloween, and we've got another episode coming up, so y'all hang in here with us. This next episode, if you like this one, the next one is amazing. We get into a lot of good stuff. So, really appreciate y'all coming in. I hope it's blessing y'all. And thank you so much, Paul Roberts. Two Dudes, One God Pod. See you Friday.